Schools, philosophies, when narrow, dark alleys of thought, national, religious, economic, grow and disintegrate, man reaches, stumbles forward, painfully, mistakenly sometimes. Having stepped forward, he may slip back, but only half a step, never the full step back. This you may say and know it, and know it. This you may know when the bombs plummet out of the black plains on the marketplace, when prisoners are stuck like pigs, when the crushed bodies drain filthily in the dust. You may know it in this way. If the step were not being taken, if the stumbling forward ache were not alive, the bombs would not fall, the throats would not be cut. Fear the time when the bombs stop falling, while the bombers live, for every bomb is proof that the spirit has not died. And fear the time when the strikes stop, while the great owners live, for every little beaten strike is proof that the step is being taken. And this you can know. Fear the time when man's self will not suffer and die for a concept. For this one quality is the foundation of man's self, and this one quality is man, distinctive in the universe. The western states nervous under the beginning change. Texas and Oklahoma, Kansas and Arkansas, New Mexico, Arizona, California. A single family move from the land. Pa borrowed money from the bank, and now the bank wants the land. The land company, that's the bank when it has land, wants tractors, not families, on the land. Is a tractor bad? Is the power that turns the long furrows wrong? If this tractor were ours, it would be good. Not mine, but ours. If our tractor turned the long furrows of our land, it would be good. Not my land, but ours. We could love that tractor then as we have loved this land when it was ours. But this tractor does two things. It turns the land and turns us off the land. There is little difference between this tractor and a tank. The people are driven, intimidated, hurt by both. We must think about this. One man, one family driven from the land. This rusty car creaking along the highway to the west. I lost my land. A single tractor took my land. I am alone, and I am bewildered. But in the night, one family camps in a ditch, and another family pulls in, and the tents come out. The two men squat on their hams, and the women and children listen. Here is the node. You who hate change and fear revolution, keep these two squatting men apart. Make them hate, fear, suspect each other. Here is the anlaja of the thing you fear. This is the zygote. For here, I lost my land is changed. A cell is split, and from its splitting grows the thing you hate. We lost our land. The danger is here, for two men are not as lonely and perplexed as one, and from this first we there grows a still more dangerous thing. I have a little food, plus I have none. If from this problem the sum is we have a little food, the thing is on its way, the movement has direction. Only a little multiplication now, and this land, this tractor are ours. The two men squatting in a ditch, the little fire, the side meat stewing in a single pot, the silent, stone-eyed women, behind the children listening with their souls to words their minds do not understand. The night draws down. The baby has a cold. Here, take this blanket. It's wool. It was my mother's blanket. Take it for the baby. This is the thing to bomb. This is the beginning, from I to we. If you who own the things people must have could understand this, you might preserve yourself. If you could separate causes from results, if you could know that Paine, Marx, Jefferson, Lenin were results, not causes, you might survive. But that you cannot know, for the quality of owning freezes you forever into I, and cuts you off forever from the we. The Western states are nervous under the beginning change. Need is the stimulus to concept, concept to action. A 500,000 people moving over the country. 1,000,000 more restive, ready to move. 10,000,000 more feeling the first nervousness. And tractors turning the multiple furrows in the vacant land. Chapter 15. Along 66th, the hamburger stands. Al and Susie's place. Carl's lunch. Joe and Minnie. Will's eats. Board and bat shacks. 2 gasoline pumps in front. A screen door. A long bar. Stools and a foot rail. Near the door, 3 slot machines. Showing through glass the wealth and nickels 3 bars will bring. And beside them, the nickel phonograph with records piled up like pies, ready to swing out to the turntable and play dance music. Tippity-tippitin, Thanks for the Memory, Bing Crosby, Benny Goodman. At one end of the counter a covered case, candy cough drops, caffeine sulfate called Sleepless, No Doze, candy, cigarettes, razor blades, aspirin, bromo-seltzer, Alka-Seltzer. The walls decorated with posters, bathing girls, blondes with big breasts and slender hips and waxen faces, in white bathing suits and holding a bottle of Coca-Cola and smiling. See what you get with a Coca-Cola. Long bar and salts, peppers, mustard pots and paper napkins. Beer taps behind the counter, and in back the coffee urns, shiny and steaming, with glass gauges showing the coffee level, and pies in wire cages and oranges in pyramids of 4, and little piles of post-toasties, cornflakes, stacked up in designs. The signs on cards, picked out with shining mica, pies like Mother used to make. Credit makes enemies, let's be friends. Ladies may smoke, but be careful where you lay your butts. Eat here and keep your wife for a pet.
I-I-T-Y-W-I-B-A-D?
Down at one end, the cooking plates, pots of stew, potatoes, pot roast, roast beef, gray roast pork waiting to be sliced. Minnie or Susie or May, middle-aging behind the counter, hair curled in rouge and powder on a sweating face, taking orders in a soft, low voice, calling them to the cook with a screech like a peacock, mopping the counter with circular strokes, polishing the big shining coffee urns. The cook is Joe, or Carl, or Al, hot in a white coat and apron, beady sweat on white forehead, below the white cook's cap, moody, rarely speaking, looking up for a moment at each new entry. Wiping the griddle, slapping down the hamburger, he repeats May's orders gently, scrapes the griddle, wipes it down with burlap, moody and silent. May is the contact, smiling, irritated, near to outbreak, smiling when her eyes look on past, unless for truck drivers. There's the backbone of the joint. Where the trucks stop, that's where the customers come. Can't fool truck drivers, they know. They bring the custom. They know. Give them a stale cup of coffee and they're off the joint. Treat them right and they come back. May really smiles with all her might at truck drivers. She bridles a little, fixes her back hair so that her breasts will lift with her raised arms, passes the time of day and indicates great things, great times, great jokes. Al never speaks. He is no contact. Sometimes he smiles a little at a joke, but he never laughs. Sometimes he looks up at the vivaciousness in May's voice, and then he scrapes the griddle with a spatula, scrapes the grease into an iron trough around the plate. He presses down a hissing hamburger with his spatula. He lays the split buns on the plate to toast and heat. He gathers up stray onions from the plate and heaps them on the meat and presses them in with a spatula. He puts half the bun on top of the meat, paints the other half with melted butter, with thin pickle relish. Holding the bun on the meat, he slips the spatula under the thin pad of meat, flips it over, lays the buttered half on top, and drops the hamburger on a small plate. Quarter of a dill pickle, two black olives beside the sandwich. Al skims the plate down the counter like a quoit, and he scrapes his griddle with a spatula and looks moodily at the stew kettle. Cars whisking by on 66. License plates, Mass, 10, RI, NY, VT, Ohio. Going west. Fine cars, cruising at 65. There goes one of them cords. Looks like a coffin on wheels. But Jesus, how they travel. See that LaSalle? Me for that. I ain't a hog, I go for a LaSalle. If you're going big, what's the matter with a cad? Just a little bigger, a little faster. I'd take a Zephyr myself. You ain't riding no fortune, but you got class and speed. Give me a Zephyr. Well, sir, you may get a laugh out of this. I'll take a Buick Puick. That's good enough. But hell, that costs in the Zephyr class and it ain't got the sap. I don't care. I don't want nothing to do with nothing of Henry Ford's. I don't like him. Never did. Got a brother worked in the plant. Ought to hear him tell. Well, a Zephyr got sap. The big cars on the highway. Languid, heat-rattled ladies. Small nucleuses about whom revolve a thousand accoutrements. Creams. Ointments to grease themselves. Coloring matter in files. Black, pink, red, white, green, silver. To change the color of hair. Eyes. Lips. Nails, brows, lashes, lids, oils, seeds, and pills to make the bowels move, a bag of bottles, syringes, pills, powders, fluids, jellies, to make their sexual intercourse safe, odorless, and unproductive. And this apart from clothes. What a hell of a nuisance. Lines of weariness around the eyes, lines of discontent down from the mouth, breasts lying heavily in little hammocks, stomach and thighs straining against cases of rubber, and the mouths panting, the eyes sullen, disliking sun and wind and earth, resenting food and weariness, hating time that rarely makes them beautiful and always makes them old. Beside them, little pot-bellied men in light suits and Panama hats, clean, pink men with puzzled, worried eyes, with restless eyes. Worried because formulas do not work out. Hungry for security, and yet sensing its disappearance from the earth. In their lapels, the insignia of lodges and service clubs. Places where they can go and by a weight of numbers of little worried men, reassure themselves that business is noble, and not the curious, ritualized thievery they know it is, that businessmen are intelligent, in spite of the records of their stupidity, that they are kind and charitable, in spite of the principles of sound business, that their lives are rich, instead of the thin, tiresome routines they know, and that a time is coming when they will not be afraid anymore. And these two, going to California, going to sit in the lobby of the Beverly Wilshire Hotel and watch people they envy go by. To look at mountains, mountains, mind you, and great trees. He with his worried eyes, and she thinking how the sun will dry her skin. Going to look at the Pacific Ocean. And I'll bet $100,000 to nothing at all, he will say, "It isn't as big as I thought it would be." And she will envy plump, young bodies on the beach. Going to California, really, to go home again, to say, "So-and-so was at the table next to us at the Trocadero. She's really a mess, but she does wear nice clothes." And he, "I talk to good, sound businessmen out there. They don't see a chance till we get rid of that fella in the White House." And, I got it from a man in the know. She has syphilis, you know. She was in that Warner picture. Man said she'd slept her way into pictures. Well, she got what she was looking for. But the worried eyes are never calm, and the pouting mouth is never glad. The big car cruising along at 60. I want a cold drink. Well, there's something up ahead. Want to stop? Do you think it would be clean? Clean as you're going to find in this godforsaken country. Well, maybe the bottled soda will be all right. The great car squeals and pulls to a stop. The fat, worried man helps his wife out. May looks at and past them as they enter. Al looks up from his griddle and down again. May knows. They'll drink a 5-cent soda and crab that it ain't cold enough. The woman will use 6 paper napkins and drop them on the floor. The man will choke and try to put the blame on May. The woman will sniff as though she smelled rotting meat, and they will go out again and tell forever afterward that the people in the West are sullen. And May, when she is alone with Al, has a name for them. She calls them shitheels. Truck drivers, that's the stuff. Here's a big transport coming. Hope they stop. Take away the taste of them shitheels. When I worked in that hotel in Albuquerque, Al, the way they steal every darn thing. The bigger the car they got, the more they steal. Towels, silver, soap dishes. I can't figure it. And Al, morosely, where you think they get them big cars and stuff born with them? You won't never have nothing. The transport truck, a driver, and relief. How about stopping for a cup of Java? I know this dump. How's the schedule? Oh, we're ahead. Pull up, then. There's an old war horse in here that's a kick. Good Java, too. The truck pulls up. 2 men in khaki riding trousers, boots, short jackets, and shiny visored military caps. Screen door, slam. Hi, you may. Well, if it ain't Big Bill the Rat, when'd you get back on this run? Week ago. The other man puts a nickel in the phonograph, watches the disc slip free, and the turntable rise up under it. Bing Crosby's voice, golden. Thanks for the memory of sunburn at the shore. You might have been a headache, but you never were a bore. And the truck driver sings for May's ears, you might have been a headache, but you never was a whore. May laughs. Who's your friend, Bill? New on this run, ain't he? The other puts a nickel in the slot machine, wins 4 slugs and puts them back, walks to the counter. Well, what's it gonna be? Oh, cup of Java. Kind of pie you got? Banana cream, pineapple cream, chocolate cream, and apple. Make it apple. Wait. Kind of is that big, thick one. May lifts it out and sniffs it. Banana cream. Cut off a hunk. Make it a big hunk. Man at the slot machine says, 2 all around. 2 it is. Seen any new etchings lately, Bill? Well, here's one. Now, you be careful in front of a lady. Oh, this ain't bad. Little kid comes in late to school. Teacher says, why are you late? Kid says, had to take a heifer down, get her bread. Teacher says, couldn't your old man do it? Kid says, sure he could, but not as good as a bull. May squeaks with laughter, harsh, screeching laughter. Al, slicing onions carefully on a board, looks up and smiles, and then looks down again. Truck drivers, that's the stuff. Gonna leave a quarter each for May. 15 cents for pie and coffee, and a dime for May. And they ain't trying to make her neither. Sitting together on the stools, spoons sticking up out of the coffee mugs, passing the time of day, and Al rubbing down his griddle, listening but making no comment. Bing Crosby's voice stops. The turntable drops down, and the record swings into its place in the pile. The purple light goes off. The nickel, which has caused all this mechanism to work, has caused Crosby to sing and an orchestra to play. This nickel drops from between the contact points into the box where the profits go. This nickel, unlike most money, has actually done a job of work, has been physically responsible for a reaction. Steam spurts from the valve of the coffee urn. The compressor of the ice machine chugs softly for a time and then stops. The electric fan in the corner waves its head slowly back and forth, sweeping the room with a warm breeze. On the highway, on 66, the cars whiz by. "They was a Massachusetts car stopped a while ago," said May. Big Bill grasped his cup around the top so that the spoon stuck up between his first and second fingers. He drew in a snort of air with the coffee to cool it. "You ought to be out on 66 cars from all over the country, all heading west. Never seen so many before. Sure some honey's on the road." "We seen a wreck this morning," his companion said. "Big car, big cab, a special job and a honey, low cream color special job. Hit a truck. Folded the radiator right back into the driver. Must have been doing 90. Steering wheel went right on through the guy and left him a-wiggling like a frog on a hook. Peach of a car, a honey. You can have her for peanuts now." "Driving alone, the guy was." Al looked up from his work. "Hurt the truck?" "Oh, Jesus Christ, wasn't a truck. One of them cut-down cars full of stoves and pans and mattresses and kids and chickens going west, you know. This guy comes by us doing 90, reared up on two wheels just to pass us, and a car's coming, so he cuts in and whangs this here truck. Drove like he's blind drunk. Jesus, the air was full of bedclothes and chickens and kids. Killed one kid. Never seen such a mess. We pulled up. Old man that's driving the truck, he just stands there looking at that dead kid. Can't get a word out of him. Just rum-dum. God almighty, the road is full of them. Families going west. Never seen so many. Gets worse all the time. Wonder where the hell they all come from." "Wonder where they all go to," said May. "Come here for gas sometimes, but they don't hardly never buy nothing else. People says they steal. We ain't got nothing laying around. They never stole nothing from us." Big Bill, munching his pie, looked up the road through the screened window. "Better tie your stuff down. I think you got some of 'em coming now." A 1926 Nash sedan pulled wearily off the highway. The back seat was piled nearly to the ceiling with sacks, with pots and pans, and on the very top, right up against the ceiling, two boys rode. On the top of the car, a mattress and a folded tent, tent poles tied along the running board. The car pulled up to the gas pumps. A dark-haired, hatchet-faced man got slowly out, and the two boys slid down from the load and hit the ground. May walked around the counter and stood in the door. The man was dressed in gray wool trousers and a blue shirt, dark blue with sweat on the back and under the arms. The boys in overalls and nothing else, ragged, patched overalls. Their hair was light, and it stood up evenly all over their heads, for it had been roached. Their faces were streaked with dust. They went directly to the mud puddle under the hose and dug their toes into the mud. The man asked, "Can we get some water, ma'am?" A look of annoyance crossed May's face. "Sure, go ahead," she said softly over her shoulder. "I'll keep my eye on the hose." She watched while the man slowly unscrewed the radiator cap and ran the hose in. A woman in the car, a flaxen-haired woman, said, "See if you can't get it here." The man turned off the hose and screwed on the cap again. The little boys took the hose from him, and they upended it and drank thirstily. The man took off his dark, stained hat and stood with a curious humility in front of the screen.
"Could you see your way to sell us a loaf of bread, ma'am?"
May said,
"This ain't a grocery store. We got bread to make sandwiches."
"I know, ma'am."
His humility was insistent.
"We need bread, and there ain't nothing for quite a piece, they say.
If we sell bread, we gonna run out. May's tone was faltering.
We're hungry, the man said.
Well, why don't you buy a sandwich? We got nice sandwiches, hamburgers.
We'd sure admire to do that, ma'am, but we can't. We gotta make a dime do all of us. And he said embarrassedly, we ain't got but a little.
May said, you can't get no loaf of bread for a dime. We only got 15-cent loaves.
From behind her, Al growled,
God almighty, May, give 'em bread.
We'll run out before the bread truck comes.
Run out then, God damn it, said Al,
and he looked down sullenly at the potato salad he was mixing. May shrugged her plump shoulders and looked to the truck drivers to show them what she was up against. She held the screen door open, and the man came in, bringing a smell of sweat with him. The boys edged in behind him, and they went immediately to the candy case and stared in, not with craving or with hope or even with desire, but just with a kind of wonder that such things could be. They were alike in size, and their faces were alike. One scratched his dusty ankle with the toenails of his other foot. The other whispered some soft message, and then they straightened their arms so that their clenched fists in the overall pocket showed through the thin blue cloth. May opened a drawer and took out a long wax-paper-wrapped loaf.
This here is a 15-cent loaf.
The man put his hat back on his head. He answered with inflexible humility,
won't you? Can't you see your way to cut off 10 cents worth?
Al said snarlingly,
God damn it, May, give him the loaf.
The man turned toward Al.
No, we want to buy 10 cents worth of it. We got it figured awful close, mister, to get to California.
May said resignedly, you can have this for 10 cents.
That'd be robbing you, ma'am.
Go ahead.
Al says to take it.
She pushed the wax-papered loaf across the counter. The man took a deep leather pouch from his rear pocket, untied the strings, and spread it open. It was heavy with silver and with greasy bills.
May sound funny to be so tight, he apologized. We got 1,000 miles to go, and we don't know if we'll make it.
He dug in the pouch with a forefinger, located a dime, and pinched in for it. When he put it down on the counter, he had a penny with it. He was about to drop the penny back into the pouch when his eye fell on the boys, frozen before the candy counter. He moved slowly down to them. He pointed in the case at big, long sticks of striped peppermint.
Is them penny candy, ma'am?
May moved down and looked in.
Which ones?
There. Them stripy ones?
The little boys raised their eyes to her face, and they stopped breathing. Their mouths were partly opened. Their half-naked bodies were rigid.
Oh, them, well, no, them's 2 for a penny.
Well, gimme 2 then, ma'am.
He placed the copper cent carefully on the counter. The boys expelled their held breath softly. May held the big sticks out.
Take 'em,
said the man. They reached timidly, each took a stick, and they held them down at their sides and did not look at them. But they looked at each other, and their mouth corners smiled rigidly with embarrassment.
Thank you, ma'am.
The man picked up the bread and went out the door, and the little boys marched stiffly behind him, the red striped sticks held tightly against their legs. They leaped like chipmunks over the front seat and onto the top of the load, and they burrowed back out of sight like chipmunks. The man got in and started his car, and with a roaring motor and a cloud of blue, oily smoke, the ancient Nash climbed up on the highway and went on its way to the west. From inside the restaurant, the truck drivers and May and Al stared after them. Big Bill wheeled back.
Them wasn't 2 for a cent candy, he said.
What's that to you?
May said fiercely. Them was nickel apiece candy, said Bill.
We gotta get going, said the other man. We're dropping time. They reached in their pockets. Bill put a coin on the counter, and the other man looked at it and reached again and put down a coin. They swung around and walked to the door.
So long, said Bill.
May called,
Hey, wait a minute. You got change.
You go to hell, said Bill, and the screen door slammed.
May watched them get into the great truck, watched it lumber off in low gear, and heard the shift up, the whining gears to cruising ratio.
Al, she said softly.
He looked up from the hamburger he was patting thin and stacking between waxed papers.
What you want?
Look there.
She pointed at the coins beside the cups. $2 half dollars. Al walked near and looked, and then he went back to his work.
Truck drivers, May said reverently, and after them shitheels.
Flies struck the screen with little bumps and droned away. The compressor chugged for a time and then stopped. On 66 the traffic whizzed by, trucks and fine streamlined cars and jalopies, and they went by with a vicious whiz. May took down the plates and scraped the pie crusts into a bucket. She found her damp cloth and wiped the counter with circular sweeps. And her eyes were on the highway, where life whizzed by. Al wiped his hands on his apron. He looked at a paper pinned to the wall over the griddle. 3 lines of marks and columns on the paper. Al counted the longest line. He walked along the counter to the cash register, rang no sale, and took out a handful of nickels.
What you doing? May asked.
Number 3's ready to pay off, said Al.
He went to the 3rd slot machine and played his nickels in, and on the 5th spin of the wheels, the 3 bars came up, and the jackpot dumped out into the cup. Al gathered up the big handful of coins and went back of the counter. He dropped them in the drawer and slammed the cash register. Then he went back to his place and crossed out the line of dots.
Number 3 gets more play than the others, he said. Maybe I ought to shift 'em around.
He lifted a lid and stirred the slowly simmering stew.
I wonder what they'll do in California, said May.
Who?
Them folks that was just in.
Christ knows, said Al.
Suppose they'll get work?
How the hell would I know, said Al.
She stared eastward along the highway.
Here comes a transport, double.
Wonder if they stop, hope they do.
And as the huge truck came heavily down from the highway and parked, May seized her cloth and wiped the whole length of the counter, and she took a few swipes at the gleaming coffee urn, too, and turned up the bottle gas under the urn. Al brought out a handful of little turnips and started to peel them. May's face was gay when the door opened, and the 2 uniformed truck drivers entered.
Hi, sister.
I won't be a sister to no man, said May.
They laughed, and May laughed.
What'll it be, boys?
Oh, a cup of Java.
What kind of pie you got?
Pineapple cream and banana cream and chocolate cream and apple.
Gimme apple. No, wait, what's that big, thick one?
May picked up the pie and smelled it.
Pineapple cream, she said.
Well, chop out a hunk of that.
The cars whizzed viciously by on 66. Chapter 16. Jodes and Wilson's crawled westward as a unit. El Reno and Bridgeport, Clinton, Elk City, Sayre and Texola. There's the border, and Oklahoma was behind. And this day the cars crawled on and on through the panhandle of Texas. Shamrock and Allen Reed, Groom and Yarnell, then went through Amarillo in the evening, drove too long, and camped when it was dusk. They were tired and dusty and hot. Grandma had convulsions from the heat, and she was weak when they stopped. That night Al stole a fence rail and made a ridge pole on the truck, braced at both ends. That night they ate nothing but pan biscuits, cold and hard, held over from breakfast. They flopped down on the mattresses and slept in their clothes. The Wilsons didn't even put up their tent. Jodes and Wilsons were in flight across the panhandle, the rolling gray country, lined and cut with old flood scars. They were in flight out of Oklahoma and across Texas. The land turtles crawled through the dust, and the sun whipped the earth, and in the evening the heat went out of the sky, and the earth sent up a wave of heat from itself. 2 days the families were in flight, but on the third the land was too huge for them, and they settled into a new technique of living. The highway became their home, and movement their medium of expression. Little by little they settled into the new life. Ruthie and Winfield first, then Al, then Connie and Rose of Sharon, and last, the older ones. The land rolled like great stationary ground swells. Wildorado and Vega and Boise and Glen Rio. That's the end of Texas. New Mexico and the mountains. In the far distance, waved up against the sky, the mountains stood. And the wheels of the cars creaked around, and the engines were hot, and the steam spurted around the radiator caps. They crawled to the Pecos River and crossed at Santa Rosa, and they went on for 20 miles. Al Joe drove the touring car, and his mother sat beside him, and Rose of Sharon beside her. Ahead, the truck crawled. The hot air folded in waves over the land, and the mountains shivered in the heat. Al drove listlessly, hunched back in the seat, his hand hooked easily over the crossbar of the steering wheel, his gray hat, peaked and pulled to an incredibly cocky shape, was low over one eye, and as he drove, he turned and spat out the side now and then. Ma, beside him, had folded her hands in her lap, had retired into a resistance against weariness. She sat loosely, letting the movement of the car sway her body and her head. She squinted her eyes ahead at the mountains. Rose of Sharon was braced against the movement of the car, her feet pushed tight against the floor, and her right elbow hooked over the door. And her plump face was tight against the movement, and her head jiggled sharply because her neck muscles were tight. She tried to arch her whole body as a rigid container to preserve her fetus from shock. She turned her head toward her mother. "Ma," she said. Ma's eyes lighted up, and she drew her attention toward Rose of Sharon. Her eyes went over the tight, tired, plump face, and she smiled. "Ma," the girl said, "when we get there, all you gonna pick fruit and kind of live in the country, ain't you?" Ma smiled a little satirically. "We ain't there yet," she said. "We don't know what it's like. We got to see." "Me and Connie don't want to live in the country no more," the girl said. "We got it all planned up what we gonna do." For a moment, a little worry came on Ma's face. "Ain't you gonna stay with us, with the family?" she asked. "Well, we talked all about it, me and Connie. Ma, we want to live in a town," she went on excitedly. "Connie gonna get a job in a store or maybe a factory, and he's gonna study at home, maybe radio, so he can get to be an expert and maybe later have his own store. And we'll go to pictures whenever. And Connie says I'm gonna have a doctor when the baby's born. And he says we'll see how times is, and maybe I'll go to a hospital. And we'll have a car, little car. And after he studies at night, why, it'll be nice. And he tore a page out of Western Love Stories, and he's gonna send off for a course, 'cause it don't cost nothing to send off, says right on that clipping. I seen it. And why, they even get you a job when you take that course, radios it is, nice clean work and a future. And we'll live in town and go to pictures whenever and, well,
I'm going to have electric iron, and the baby will have all new stuff. Connie says all new stuff, white, and, well, you seen in the catalog all the stuff they got for a baby. Maybe right at first, while Connie's studying at home, it won't be so easy, but, well, when the baby comes, maybe he'll be all done studying, and we'll have a place, a little bit of a place. We don't want nothing fancy, but we want it nice for the baby. Her face glowed with excitement, and I thought, well, I thought maybe we could all go in town, and when Connie gets his store, maybe Al could work for him. Ma's eyes had never left the flushing face. Ma watched the structure grow and followed it. "We don't want you to go away from us," she said. "It ain't good for folks to break up." Al snorted.
"Me?
Work for Connie? How about Connie comes a-working for me? He thinks he's the only son of a bitch can study at night." Ma suddenly seemed to know it was all a dream. She turned her head forward again, and her body relaxed. But the little smile stayed around her eyes. "I wonder how Grandma feels today," she said. Al grew tense over the wheel. A little rattle had developed in the engine. He speeded up, and the rattle increased. He retarded his spark and listened, and then he speeded up for a moment and listened. The rattle increased to a metallic pounding. Al blew his horn and pulled the car to the side of the road. Ahead, the truck pulled up and then backed slowly. Three cars raced by, westward, and each one blew its horn, and the last driver leaned out and yelled, "Where the hell you think you're stopping?" Tom backed the truck close, and then he got out and walked to the touring car. From the back of the loaded truck, heads looked down. Al retarded his spark and listened to his idling motor. Tom asked, "What's the matter, Al?" Al speeded the motor. "Listen to her." The rattling pound was louder now. Tom listened. "Put up your spark and idle," he said. He opened the hood and put his head inside. "Now speed her." He listened for a moment and then closed the hood. "Well, I guess you're right, Al," he said. "Conrad Baron, ain't it?" "Sounds like it," said Tom. "I kept plenty oil in," Al complained. "Well, it just didn't get to her. Drier than a bitch monkey now. Well, there ain't nothing to do but tear her out. Look, I'll pull ahead and find a flat place to stop. You come ahead slow. Don't knock the pan out of her." Wilson asked,
"Is it bad?"
"Pretty bad," said Tom, and walked back to the truck and moved slowly ahead. Al explained, "I don't know what made her go out. I give her plenty of oil." Al knew the blame was on him. He felt his failure. Ma said, "It ain't your fault. You done everything right." And then she asked a little timidly, "Is it terrible bad?" "Well, it's hard to get at, and we gotta get a new Conrad or else some Babbitt in this one." He sighed deeply. "I sure am glad Tom's here. I never fitted no bearing. Hope to Jesus Tom did." A huge red billboard stood beside the road ahead, and it threw a great oblong shadow. Tom edged the truck off the road and across the shallow roadside ditch, and he pulled up in the shadow. He got out and waited until Al came up. "Now go easy," he called. "Take her slow or you'll break a spring, too." Al's face went red with anger. He throttled down his motor. "God damn it," he yelled. "I didn't burn that baron out. What do you mean I'll bust a spring, too?" Tom grinned. "Keep all 4 feet on the ground," he said. "I didn't mean nothing. Just take her easy over this ditch." Al grumbled as he inched the touring car down and up the other side. "Don't you go giving nobody no idea. I burned out that baron." The engine clattered loudly now. Al pulled into the shade and shut down the motor. Tom lifted the hood and braced it. "Can't even start on her before she cools off," he said. The family piled down from the cars and clustered about the touring car. Pa asked, "How bad?" And he squatted on his hams. Tom turned to Al. "Ever fitted one?"
"No," said Al. "I never. Of course, I had pans off."
Tom said, "Well, we got to tear the pan off and get the rod out, and we got to get a new part and hone her and shim her and fit her. Good day's job. Got to go back to that last place for a part, Santa Rosa. Albuquerque's about 75 miles on... Oh, Jesus, tomorrow's Sunday. We can't get nothing tomorrow." The family stood silently. Ruthie crept close and peered into the open hood, hoping to see the broken part. Tom went on softly, "Tomorrow's Sunday. Monday we'll get the thing, and probably won't get her fitted for Tuesday. We ain't got the tools to make it easy. Gonna be a job." The shadow of a buzzard slid across the earth, and the family all looked up at the sailing black bird. Pa said,
"What I'm scared of is we'll run out of money, so we can't get there at all. Here's all us eating, and got to buy gas and oil. If we run out of money, I don't know what we're gonna do."
Wilson said, "Seems like it's my fault. This here goddamn wreck's give me trouble right along. You folks been nice to us, now you just pack up and get along. Me and Sarah'll stay and we'll figure some way. We don't aim to put you folks out none."
Pa said slowly,
"We ain't a-gonna do it. We got almost a kin bond. Grandpa, he died in your tent."
Sari said tiredly, "We been nothing but trouble. Nothing but trouble." Tom slowly made a cigarette and inspected it and lighted it. He took off his ruined cap and wiped his forehead. "I got an idea," he said. "Maybe nobody gonna like it, but here she is. The nearer to California our folks get, the quicker they's gonna be money rolling in. Now this here car'll go twice as fast as that truck. And here's my idea. You take out some of that stuff in the truck, and then all you folks but me and the preacher get in and move on. Me and Casey'll stop here and fix this here car, and then we drive on day and night and we'll catch up. Or if we don't meet on the road, you'll be a-workin' anyways. And if you break down, why, just camp alongside the road till we come. You can't be no worse off. And if you get through, why, you'll be a-workin' and stuff'll be easy. Casey can give me a lift with this here car, and we'll come a-sailin'." The gathered family considered it. Uncle John dropped to his hams beside Pa. Al said,
"Won't you need me to give you a hand with that conrod?"
"You said your own self you never fixed one."
"That's right," Al agreed. "All you got to have is a strong back. Maybe the preacher don't want to stay."
"Well, whoever, I don't care," said Tom. Pa scratched the dry earth with his forefinger.
"I kinda got a notion Tom's right," he said. "It ain't gonna do no good all of us staying here. We can get 50, 100 miles on 'fore dark."
Ma said worriedly, "How you gonna find us?"
"We'll be on the same road," said Tom. 66 right on through. Come to a place named Bakersfield. Seen it on the map I got. You go straight on there."
"Yeah, but when we get to California and spread out sideways off this road?"
"Don't you worry," Tom reassured her. "We're gonna find you. California ain't the whole world."
"Looks like an awful big place on the map," said Ma. Pa appealed for advice.
"John, you see any reason why not?"
"Nope,"
said John.
"Mr. Wilson, it's your car. You got any objections if my boy fixes her and brings her on?"
"I don't see none," said Wilson. "Seems like you folks done everything for us already.
Don't see why I can't give your boy a hand.
You can be working, laying in a little money if we don't catch up with you, said Tom. And suppose we all just lay around here. There ain't no water here, and we can't move this here car. But suppose you all get out there and get to work. Why, you'd have money and maybe a house to live in. How about it, Casey? Want to stay with me and give me a lift?
I want to do what's best for you folks, said Casey. You took me in, carried me along. I'll do whatever.
Well, you'll lay on your back and get grease in your face if you stay here, Tom said.
Suits me all right.
Pa said,
Well, if that's the way she's gonna go, we better get a shoving. We can maybe squeeze in 100 miles before we stop.
Ma stepped in front of him. I ain't gonna go.
What you mean, you ain't gonna go? You got to go. You got to look after the family.
Pa was amazed at the revolt. Ma stepped to the touring car and reached in on the floor of the back seat. She brought out a jack handle and balanced it in her hand easily.
I ain't a gonna go, she said.
I tell you, you got to go. We made up our mind.
And now Ma's mouth set hard. She said softly,
Only way you're gonna get me to go is whoop me.
She moved the jack handle gently again.
And I'll shame you, Pa. I won't take no whoopin'. Crying and a-beggin', I'll light into you. And you ain't so sure you can whoop me anyways. And if you do get me, I swear to God I'll wait till you got your back turned or you're settin' down, and I'll knock your belly up with a bucket. I swear to holy Jesus' sake I will.
Pa looked helplessly about the group.
She's sassy, he said. I've never seen her so sassy.
Ruthie giggled shrilly. The jack handle flicked hungrily back and forth in Ma's hand.
Come on, said Ma. You made up your mind? Come on and whoop me. Just try it, but I ain't a-goin'. Or if I do, you ain't never gonna get no sleep, 'cause I'll wait and wait, and just the minute you take sleep in your eyes, I'll slap you with a stick of stove wood.
So goddamn sassy, Pa murmured. And she ain't young, neither.
The whole group watched the revolt. They watched Pa, waiting for him to break into fury. They watched his lax hands to see the fists form. And Pa's anger did not rise, and his hands hung limply at his sides. And in a moment, the group knew that Ma had won. And Ma knew it, too. Tom said,
Ma, what's eating on you? What you want to do this away for? What's the matter with you anyways? You gone John Rabbit on us?
Ma's face softened, but her eyes were still fierce.
You done this without thinking much, Ma said. What we got left in the world? Nothing but us. Nothing but the folks. We come out, and Grandpa, he reached for the shovel shelf right off. And now, right off, you want to bust up the folks.
Tom cried,
Ma, we was gonna catch up with you. We wasn't gonna be gone long.
Ma waved the jack handle.
Suppose we was camped and you went on by. Suppose we got on through. How'd we know where to leave the word? And how'd you know where to ask? She said. We got a bit of road. Grandma sick. She's up there on the truck a-pawing for a shovel herself. She's just tired out. We got a long, bitter road ahead.
Uncle John said,
But we could be making some money. We could have a little bit saved up come time the other folks got there.
The eyes of the whole family shifted back to Ma. She was the power. She had taken control.
The money we'd make wouldn't do no good, she said. All we got is the family unbroke. Like a bunch of cows when the lobos are rangin', stick all together. I ain't scared while we're all here, all that's alive. But I ain't gonna see us bust up. The Wilsons here is with us, and the preacher is with us. I can't say nothing if they want to go, but I'm a-going cat wild with this here piece of bar-arn if my own folks busts up." Her tone was cold and final. Tom said soothingly, "Ma, we can't all camp here. Ain't no water here. Ain't even much shade here. Grandma, she needs shade." "All right," said Ma. "We'll go along. We'll stop first place there's water and shade, and the truck'll come back and take you in town to get your part, and it'll bring you back. You ain't going walking along in the sun, and I ain't having you out all alone, so if you get picked up, there ain't nobody of your folks to help you."
Tom drew his lips over his teeth and then snapped them open. He spread his hands helplessly and let them flop against his sides. "Pa," he said, "if you was to rush her one side and me the other, and then the rest pile on, and Grandma jump down on top, maybe we can get Ma without more'n two or three of us gets killed with that there jack-handle. But if you ain't willing to get your head smashed, I guess Ma's went and filled her flush. Jesus Christ, one person with their mind made up can shove a lot of folks around. You win, Ma. Put away that jack-handle, for you hurt somebody."
Ma looked in astonishment at the bar of iron. Her hand trembled. She dropped her weapon on the ground, and Tom, with elaborate care, picked it up and put it back in the car. He said, "Pa, you just got set back on your heels. Al, you drive the folks on and get 'em camped, and then you bring the truck back here. Me and the preacher'll get the pan off. Then if we can make it, we'll run in Santa Rosa and try and get a Conrad. Maybe we can, seeing it's Saturday night. Get jumping now so we can go. Let me have that monkey wrench and pliers out of the truck."
He reached under the car and felt the greasy pan.
"Oh yeah, let me have a can. That old bucket to catch the oil. Gotta save that."
Al handed over the bucket and Tom set it under the car and loosened the oil cap with a pair of pliers. The black oil flowed down his arm while he unscrewed the cap with his fingers, and then the black stream ran silently into the bucket. Al had loaded the family on the truck by the time the bucket was half full. Tom, his face already smudged with oil, looked out between the wheels.
"Get back fast," he called.
And he was loosening the pan bolts as the truck moved gently across the shallow ditch and crawled away. Tom turned each bolt a single turn, loosening them evenly to spare the gasket. The preacher knelt beside the wheels.
"What can I do?"
"Nothing, not right now. Soon as the oil's out and I get these here bolts loose, you can help me drop the pan off."
He squirmed away under the car, loosening the bolts with a wrench and turning them out with his fingers. He left the bolts on each end loosely threaded to keep the pan from dropping.
"Ground's still hot under here," Tom said. And then, "Say, Casey, you've been awful goddamn quiet the last few days. Why, Jesus, when I first come up with you, you was making a speech every half hour or so. And here you ain't said 10 words the last couple days. What's the matter, getting sour?"
Casey was stretched out on his stomach, looking under the car, his chin bristly with sparse whiskers rested on the back of one hand. His hat was pushed back so that it covered the back of his neck.
"I'd done enough talking when I was a preacher to last the rest of my life," he said.
"Yeah, but you done some talking since, too."
"I'm all worried up," Casey said. "I didn't even know it when I was a preaching around, but I was doing considerable tomcatting around. If I ain't gonna preach no more, I got to get married. Why, Tommy, I'm a-lustin' after the flesh."
"Me too," said Tom. "Say, the day I come out of McAllister, I was smokin'. I run me down a girl, a hoor girl, like she was a rabbit. I won't tell you what happened. I wouldn't tell nobody what happened."
Casey laughed.
"I know what happened. I went a-fastin' into the wilderness one time, and when I come out, the same damn thing happened to me.
Hell, it did, said Tom. Well, I saved my money anyway, and I give that girl a run. Thought I was nuts.